Last Transport, Part 4. Griffin and Raven moved quickly through the eerily empty corridors of the IPO headquarters building, took the secured elevator to one of the sub-basements, and emerged into a gleaming silver corridor. From there, Griffin led the way without hesitation down several side-branching hallways, through three security doors, and into one of the weapons development labs. This, too, was deserted, the workstations locked down. The scientists down on Gamma level, where Bruce Banner and the other special security forces could keep them safe. The lab had a monitor in it, and as they entered, Raven switched it on. The sight that appeared on it, the Titans scattered like a spilled load of firewood, Kara locked in desperate battle with Zod, froze them both for a few horrified seconds. Griffin turned to Raven, whose face was so emotionless it might have been made of wax. He knew what that meant, that she was, in fact, exerting all her will to keep from exploding with fury. "Can you stop him?" he asked. "No," Raven replied honestly, her voice flat and nearly inaudible. Then her eyes narrowed to white slits within the shadow of her hood, and she added, "But I can hurt him." "You'll get your chance," Griffin said. He put his hands on her shoulders, looked her in the eyes, and said, "Raven, I need you with me for what comes next, and I need you focused. It's the only chance any of us has." She held his eyes for a half second, then nodded in silent acquiescence. Her teammates would understand. After what had happened in the other world of Orifus last January, her place was at Griffin's side, and they had all acknowledged that truth. But Starfire had also spent most of that time with him, and she had rejoined the Titans for this battle. And she wouldn't forgive herself, or Zod, if any of them died. Griffin punched a combination into the keypad on a heavy floor-to-ceiling vault door built into the wall of the lab, then yanked open the door and started removing equipment from within. As he worked, he explained his plan to Raven. On Perez Island, a lone teenage girl fought for the first real time in her life, in, appropriately enough, a fight for her life. What Kara Zor-El lacked in training and experience, she almost made up for in sheer gall. For all his vast power and superior ability, Zod had grown unaccustomed to being challenged. His reputation was such that even the most hardened of Neo-Kryptonian criminals, the real hard cases that the galaxy was better off without, usually surrendered rather than face him in battle. Even Non, the most horrifying killer New Krypton had ever known, knelt before Zod. Not Kara. That would have disgraced the symbol on her chest, the blue and scarlet costume she'd surreptitiously acquired, the bright red cape that flew from her shoulders, all revealed now that Zod had incinerated her non-Kryptonian street clothes with his heat vision. It would have disgraced her lost family. It would have shamed the memory of her father, her Uncle Jor, her famous cousin Cal. That was something Kara would never do. Having made the decision to face him, it was as if she had banished all fear from her makeup, and the sheer ferocity with which she defended herself took the would-be warlord aback. More surprising, she seemed to have a slight advantage over him in power. He and his Alpha team had been in a Yellow Sun environment ever since leaving New Krypton. The NKDEA's transport starships were outfitted with Yellow Sun interior lighting, but the girl moved and hit like a person who had significantly more Yellow Sun exposure than that. As a student of the phenomenon, Zod knew that Kryptonians could take up to 10 years to reach full power under a Yellow Sun, though the curve for adults got very steep after the first few weeks. To a man with more empirical curiosity than Zod, this would have been intriguing, something worth investigating. To Zod, it was merely an annoyance. It meant it would take him longer to subdue her, and he disliked wasting time. Besides which, for all their infuriating lack of respect, the international police people were neither stupid nor lacking in resources. He had struck at an opportune time, when most of their heavy hitters were away from the city, but he had no doubt they were gathering reinforcements. He wanted to be finished and clear before they arrived. It was unfortunate about his team. He hated to lose them, especially Ursa. Then again, once he controlled New Krypton, he could mass an army to come and take her back. Not even this city could stand against 1,000 Neo-Kryptonian soldiers. The thought brought a thin smile to Zod's face as he broke 2 of Kara's ribs and sent her smashing against the base of Titan's tower almost hard enough to shift the building. Kara pushed herself to her feet and spat out blood. "Why make this so hard?" Zod asked her as he advanced with unhurried tread.
"I could ask you the same question,"
Kara replied between pained gasps for breath, holding her wounded side with one splayed hand. Before he could come up with an answer, she raked him with her heat vision and tried to take to the air. Ignoring the attack, he lunged, caught her by the ankle, and slammed her painfully to the ground. "No, no," he chided her. "There'll be no flying away for you." Hauling her upright, he turned, took to the air himself, then hurled her through the side of Titan's tower. She crashed through several internal partitions, coming to rest in one of the empty guest rooms. Zod followed her in. Once again, Kara dragged herself to her feet, then took flight once more, bashing through ceilings and floors in heedless abandon until she burst forth into the open air. Hope dared kindle in her heart as she saw the skyline of the city. If she could just reach... The general overtook her, dealt her 3 punches that could have shattered glaciers, then grabbed her by the collar and hurled her down. She splashed down on the beach at the north end of the island, sending water and sand flying in all directions. Kara pulled herself to hands and knees, coughing blood, as Zod landed on the beach and folded his arms. From the rooftop of one of the warehouses of Puckett's Landing, directly across the channel from Perez Island, a man with a long-lensed ether camera captured the young Kryptonian's defiance and beamed it out to the galaxy. "Theora, are you getting this?" Network 23 correspondent at large, Edison Carter, asked his controller. "Tell me you're getting this." "You'd better believe I'm bloody well getting it," Theora Carter replied, switching to your audio in 5, 4, 3. "This is Edison Carter coming to you live and direct on Network 23 from the city of New Avalon. You are looking at live pictures of General Zod, the director of the Neo-Kryptonian Department of Expatriate Affairs, delivering a savage and apparently unwarranted beating to one of the city's costumed heroes. And as you can see from the background, this is not the first such beating Zod has delivered today. The general is well known for excesses in the pursuit of his department's mandate, and Avalonian authorities say this time he's gone too far. Exactly who this girl is and why Zod is attacking her remain a mystery." Theora's voice broke in on his private channel. "Wait one, Edison. We have a crossfeed from Avalon 17 that may explain that." A brief explanation followed, and then Edison, as smooth as ever at on-camera improvisation, said, "We go now to New Krypton, where Victor Sage, with our affiliate, WNA Avalon 17, has more on that. Victor?" On televisions all over the galaxy, a quarter-pane picture-in-picture window appeared in the lower right-hand corner of Edison's live and direct feed from New Avalon. In it, a red-headed man in a brown suit addressed the camera, backed by the chrome and gold magnificence of the Science Council's chamber. "Thank you, Edison," Sage said. "I'm at Government Center in the Neo-Kryptonian capital city of Kandor, where evidence presented to the Science Council by the expert of justice known only as The Question has just revealed a conspiracy of shocking proportions, a conspiracy centered on General Zod." Unaware that his plans were being explained to the galaxy on network television, Zod gave Kara an almost playful kick that broke another of her ribs and sent her bouncing up the rocky beach toward the walkway to the tower. Still she wouldn't give up. Still she pulled herself once more to her feet. He had to admit she had courage, just as all the other members of her family he had dealt with over the decades had had courage. And in every case, it had gotten them killed. As Zod moved in to make his record perfect, he noticed that the afternoon light was reddening toward evening. That was as well. Escape would probably be easier under cover of dark... Wait. He stopped, turned, looked up, and found Zeta Cygni, still high in the afternoon sky. It was a little before 3 p.m. Avalon Standard Time. But Something was happening to it. A discoloration was starting to move across its face like the arc of an eclipse. As he watched, it obscured a quarter of the brilliant yellow disk and crept onward, making visible progress. Except the discoloration wasn't darkness. It was red. Scowling, he kicked in his telescopic vision, and what he saw astounded him. Hundreds of thousands of miles away, machinery so vast and complex that he couldn't even begin to comprehend its workings was moving. The light and the invisible radiation of Zeta Cygni usually carried unchanged through the many convolutions that gave the Avalon pseudo-continent its perfectly convincing circadian cycle, was being bent, altered, shifted until it almost perfectly matched the output of New Krypton's primary, the red giant Epsilon Cygni. "No," he murmured, his hushed voice a mixture of disbelief and rage. A flat, cold voice addressed him from the south. He whirled to see the shadowy form of Raven standing next to Kara, her dark cloak barely fluttering in the wind that always blew across Perez Island in the afternoon. "The weed of crime bears bitter fruit, Drew Zod," she told him icily. Zod flushed. "Witch!" he spat. "Is this your master's doing?" If he sought to prick her ego by calling Griffin her master, she not only chose not to acknowledge it, she applied her own value to the word and returned it ironically. "Everything here is my master's doing," she said. Zod ground his teeth. "I should have killed him when I had the chance," he snarled. "Wait here," Raven said flatly. "You'll have another." He lunged for her, but she had been expecting the charge. She gestured, and he crashed headlong into a wall of black light. "Azarath, Metreon, Xynthos!" she cried. Her shadowed eyes blanked by a white glow. Zod reeled, shook his head to clear it, accursed magic, and prepared to attack again. Suddenly his shadow rippled beneath him, expanded to a disk about 6 feet across, and attacked him, ice-cold black tentacles whipping up from its surface to wrap around his arms, legs, body, neck. They pulled with incredible force, feeling as though they would tear his arms from his sockets. He tried to fly, and actually did get his feet off the ground for a moment, but then the tentacles yanked him back, slamming him down flat on his back. Raven threw back her cloak, folded it around Kara, and the two of them dropped into her own shadow and disappeared. Consumed with rage, Zod heaved with all his strength and ripped himself free of the tentacles, then darted into the sky and out of their apparent reach before they could snag him again. Whirling, he scanned the New Avalon skyline. "Where have you taken her, witch?" he bellowed, his thunderous voice audible throughout the city. "Wherever you've gone, there's no escaping me. I'll find you both, and when I do..." The general's threat was to go unfinished. Streaking uptown from headquarters, Griffin timed everything in his head. The solar conversion would take about 5 minutes. When it was complete, no further G-class radiation would reach the city. That didn't mean Zod would automatically be powerless, of course. His cells had amassed a considerable stockpile of yellow sun energy over the course of his trip to Zeta Cygni and his time in the city. Griffin wouldn't have put it past the bastard to have come up with some kind of high-intensity charging technology to make the process even quicker and more effective. He would still be dangerous until his exertions burned off those reserves. Then his power would decrease steadily in proportion to those exertions until he was a normal man again. That could take as much as an hour, depending on various factors. Tricky, but not impossible. He made the last turn around Knight's Field, locked in his course for Perez Island, and ran a final diagnostic. Dual axial fusion thruster unit, fully operational. Inertia vector flight control system, okay. G-Flux power core, running at 100% of rated output. Life support, nominal. Pinpoint barrier system, standing by. Photonic armor, fully charged. G-plasma weapons array, ready. Time to make the donuts. "Wherever you've gone, there's no escaping me," Zod roared, kindly informing Griffin that Phase 1 of his plan had come off as intended. Griffin shunted the pinpoint barriers to the business ends of both gauntlets and kicked his rocket pack to maximum thrust.
"I'll find you both, and when I do..."
"What?"
Zod whirled, and even with his super-fast perceptions, he had only an instant's impression of glowing, armored fists and a grim visage beyond a semi-reflective face bowl.
Boom!
The impact sent a shockwave rippling out from Perez Island that shattered the windows in most of the buildings facing the harbor, including that side of the much-abused Titan's Tower. General Zod, caught completely off guard, slammed into the ground not far from the spot where the Bat-Jet had hit Nahn, making a second crater to go with the first. The blow actually stunned him, blacking his vision for a moment. When it cleared, he wrenched himself out of the ground's embrace and looked skyward to see...
Griffin?
The IPO chief's face, set in a grim glower, was unmistakable inside the helmet of what appeared to be an armored spacesuit. It was not the slab-sided power armor some early intelligence reports had put him in. That hadn't been sighted since the 2380s. This suit was more rounded, its arms and legs ribbed with expansion joints, and it had a wide-angle dome helmet that was almost shoulder-width. Inside that, Griffin was actually wearing another, smaller helmet, a snug-fitting finned affair of the sort that recreational rocketeers called a skull bucket. The brawny-looking suit was mostly painted yellow, with the occasional black checkering pattern identifying it as a test item or prototype of some kind. Some wag in the IPO weapons test lab had painted the word VORSICHT in bold, important-looking black capitals across its barrel chest. "Clock's ticking, General," Griffin said, his voice rendered slightly tinny by the suit's PA system. Pointing a finger at Zod, he went on, "Your time's just about up." Above and behind his right shoulder, the sun went completely red. Zod got to his feet with exaggerated dignity and brushed dirt from his uniform.
"You're a fool to face me, Earthman," he declared. "Inside that shell, you're just water and bone like the rest of your kind."
"Just like you'll be in about 10 minutes," Griffin replied, angling a thumb at the scarlet glow of Zeta Cygni.
"I don't need 10 minutes to crush you," Zod snarled.
His heat vision flashed out. Griffin interposed his right forearm, raising one of his two pinpoint barriers. The beam sizzled against the bright green rectangle and were swallowed up. Roaring, Zod abandoned the attempt and charged. Griffin raised both hands. The ghostly outlines of pistols appeared in his hands, holographic weapons that channeled the real destructive power of his suit's Regolian Covenant hybrid Getter Plasma weapons array. Green bolts of energy, cousins to Starfire's starbolts, raved from the virtual muzzles of Griffin's two blasters, peppering Zod's face and upper chest. The Neo-Kryptonian roared louder still, faltering, then pressed his charge. Griffin smiled inside his helmet and punched his jetpack's throttles open. As fast as any Kryptonian could have done it, he was gone from Zod's line of attack, streaking straight up into the sky and leaving nothing behind but a ring of vapor and a sonic boom. He rolled out of his meteor climb at 10,000 feet, turned to a southwesterly heading and checked his radar. There was Zod, climbing after him. A clever, well-trained aerial fighter, he wasn't chasing Griffin. He had instead eyeballed an intercept course that was following that. A high parabolic vector that would bring him across Griffin's path from below just as he reached the edge of the city. Griffin altered course and increased speed, confounding the attempt. So far, the suit was working perfectly, and for that, Griffin was very pleased. Not only because any failure would have left him at the dubious mercy of Zod. The XAF-1 flying frame, the very last word in personal aerospace technology, save for straight one-off overtech items like the GRF series. Its core systems represented the next generation in the IPO's revolutionary combination of Regolian, Covenant, Zentradi, and Zaytan overtechnology. Its materials were the finest yet conceived by science. Production models were expected to reach the first units in the summer of 2411. It would not be cheap, and it would require a lot of training to use properly, but its backers, Griffin included, were convinced that the AF-1, as the production model would be known, would save a lot of lives. Today was the first opportunity for the prototype to prove that contention, or not. Taking Zod into the city was a calculated risk. With most civilians evacuated and aerospace traffic grounded, few people would be put directly at risk, but the potential for property damage was quite high. On the other hand, New Avalon's steel and concrete canyons would provide Griffin with a maneuvering advantage, since he knew the city intimately, even from this particular angle, and Zod did not. If he took the General out over Lake Daniels, they would be in a straight aerial race, and in an atmosphere, the XAF-1 might not have the speed to make that work. Downtown, with the help of its inertia-canceling Zentradi maneuver control system, and with a pilot who knew the city, the suit had an edge. And even with the sun turned red by Cortana's brilliant manipulation of Sphere Control's Avalon environment systems, he'd need one to put down an opponent like Zod. There followed an intricate cat-and-mouse game through the airspace of the city, among the towers and spires, around the great ziggurat of the Aztechnology building, up and down the glittering chrome flanks of Genom Tower. Slashes of heat vision and barrages of G-plasma fire scored hits on both sides, chewing away the energy reserves of the XAF-1's photonic armor on the one side and battering at Zod's resiliency on the other. On the rare occasions when the two combatants actually crossed paths, blows were exchanged, denting the XAF-1's plastron and bloodying Zod's nose. Kara Zor-El and Raven watched it all from the roof of the International Police Building. Raven didn't like it. She was supposed to be taking Kara to the hospital, where the rest of the Titans were already safely ensconced. But Kara insisted, and given what the girl had invested in this fight, Raven couldn't find it in herself to deny her. Lorna Durga watched it all from the Artillery Observation Tower on Gallery Island, the 75th floor sightseeing deck of the entire State Building, and the Situation Monitor holotank in the IPO Emergency Communications Center. Amber Lou, her more aggressive self, mimed punches and cheered. Violet Lou, her meeker side, winced and looked away often. And just plain Lou, her balanced part, stayed on the phones, coordinating the many other IPO agents throughout the city who were fighting fires and trying to restore services knocked out by the earlier rampages of the Zodite agents. Edison Carter watched it all from Puckett's Landing, and the whole galaxy watched with him. The Science Council of New Krypton deplores the unwarranted and uncivilized actions of the renegade Druz Zod, Ral'uv was saying in the subfeed window from Kandor, but almost no one was paying attention. He is hereby stripped of all Neo-Kryptonian rank and office. A warrant for his arrest has been issued by the new director of the Department of Expatriate Affairs. The message, wryly delivered by Amber Lou, crackled out on the IPO and NAPD tactical channels, not that it made any functional difference now. Unnecessary violence in the apprehension of General Zod has been approved. Zod could feel himself weakening, his flight speed slowing. The blasts from Griffin's weapons hurt now, and were doing actual damage to his uniform and the hide underneath. Heat vision required effort. Soon flying would as well. The filthy Earthman was waiting him out, playing on his temper and his frustration to make him waste his energy. Well, no more. Summoning all the iron self-discipline that had carried him from humble beginnings to his exalted position, he gathered up his strength and poured it into a sudden burst of speed. The maneuver took Griffin off guard. Zod slammed into him, the impact depleting the last of his suit's photonic armor. The slick, semi-visible body shield flickered and went out, allowing Zod to get a grip on the suit. He dug the fingers of one hand into Griffin's left pauldron, deforming the metal. Griffin twisted, punching him in the side over a particularly painful-looking plasma burn. Hissing through his teeth, Zod lost his grip, tried to renew it, and tore the XAF-1's domed outer helmet halfway off at the seal ring, causing the Duracris faceball to explode in a shower of safety-blunt crystal pebbles. Griffin's inner helmet saved him from having the top of his skull sliced off as the deformed seal ring whanged into his temple on the way up and over. He rolled with the blow, negating most of what the helmet didn't stop, and punched Zod once, twice, three times across the jaw with alternating fists. The Neo-Kryptonian faltered, visibly logy now, and Griffin kicked himself free, tearing off the twisted remains of the outer helmet in the process. Kicking in full thrust, he shot skyward again, this time unloading a full barrage of G-plasma fire downward as he went. Zod, pelted by the energy, reeled in mid-air, but still he didn't drop. Instead, summoning up another manic burst of energy, he blasted after his foe with heat vision. The beam slashed upward and punched through the XAF-1's armored side, missing Griffin's body but killing power to the suit's right arm. Smoke trailed after the armored figure as he flipped out of his climb and threw himself into a power dive. Zod blasted at him again. He snapped up his left arm, a pinpoint barrier to stop it, but the need to do so robbed him of the opportunity to strafe Zod as he passed. The starboard thruster on his backpack was beginning to sputter. Kara could stand and watch no longer. She tried to take to the air, but gave a small cry of pain and dropped back to the rooftop after only an inch or so of headway, not even as far as a normal human could jump. "What are you doing?" Raven asked. Holding her injured ribs with one hand, Kara turned to Raven, looked her in the eyes, and said, "I need your help." Raven blinked in surprise. "What?" "Get me up there." "What?" Raven repeated. Kara made a small noise of frustration. "I can't fly, but I can still fight. Just get me to him. I'll do the rest." For a moment, Raven didn't respond. She stood staring back, her eyes unreadable, as Kara's brilliant blue gaze bored into them. Then she smiled very slightly and said quietly, "You got it." Griffin banked behind a building for a moment and completed an emergency shunt that restored power to his right arm and stabilized his thruster balance again. He wasn't sure the patch would hold. These systems were somewhat unfamiliar, but it was the best he could do in a few seconds. He had to press his advantage, such as it was, before Zod regained his composure. He rocketed out around the other side and made for the would-be dictator. Zod started moving to meet him, intent on making it a slugging match again, and Griffin stopped him cold with another barrage of G-plasma fire. Zod pitched back, reeled, lost altitude, regained it, as the green bolts of energy tore at his clothes and his rapidly weakening hide. Another couple of seconds and he was sure to drop. With a sharp crack and a stinging jolt of pain to Griffin's side, something in the damaged area of the XAF-1's systems blew. Both weapons arrays went dead, the hard light virtual pistols vanishing. His right arm blacked out altogether, dropping heavily to his side. He tried the pinpoint barrier on his left arm, got a small but stable disc, shoved it to the knuckles of his gauntlet, and called on the backpack for everything it could give him. Zod recovered his wits, surprised that the Earthman hadn't finished him off, and saw Griffin powering toward him with one arm limp, no evident weapons, and an obvious fire burning in the right flank of his suit. He smiled. He didn't have much strength left, but what he had was enough to punch a fist through his miserable foe's toy suit and reduce his feeble heart to mush. The day was lost, and possibly all his hopes with it. But at least this infuriating insect wouldn't live to boast that he had defeated the almighty Zod. He opened his mouth to roar a challenge and started to throw himself into the charge when a voice from behind him cried, "Zod!" Zod's mind went blank with shock. He whirled sluggishly and saw Kara Zor-El hurtling toward him, her right fist cocked for a punch, her scarlet cape flying behind her. Her blow, delivered with all the strength left in her sore, injured body, connected at almost exactly the same time as Griffin's. Zod's consciousness went out like a candle before a gale. He dropped like a stone toward Tesla Square. All of Kara's momentum from the spell of ravens that had hurled her into the sky went into him, and she, too, began to fall. Griffin squeezed a little more speed out of his Kothic jetpack, got his good arm under her, and then the thrusters sputtered and went dark. Smiling her darkly satisfied smile, Raven got all four of them to the ground in one piece. In the square, a few citizens who either hadn't made it to their shelters, hadn't gone, or had come out to have a look when the aerial fight started appearing on TV, gathered and started applauding. A moment later, Edison Carter barreled around a corner on a borrowed NAPD Cyclone, his ether cam balanced on his shoulder, and skidded to a halt in front of them. A uniformed cop pulled a fire extinguisher from his car and applied it to the small blaze in the side of Griffin's XAF-1, for which Griffin was most grateful. That was the tableau viewers all over the galaxy saw on Network 23, and all the other networks that were paying through the nose for Net23's exclusive feed of this remarkable incident. Griffin, panting for breath in his stout and battered spacesuit, Raven dark-cloaked and silent beside him, a burned and bloodied General Zod sprawled at his feet, and a somewhat bruised but bright-eyed blonde girl in a colorful costume supported by his left arm, while a New Avalon police officer sprayed fire-retardant foam at him. "Chief Hutchins!" Edison said, jumping off the cyclone and advancing with a broad smile on his face. "Edison Carter, Network 23, do you have any comment?" Griffin set Kara down on her feet, gave Edison a one-moment-please palm, knelt next to Zod, leaned down, and, still catching his breath, panted, "Drew Zod of New Krypton, you're under arrest." Zod replied. The steadily growing crowd of onlookers applauded wildly. Edison turned his camera to Kara. "Miss, we're live and direct on Network 23. The Science Council of New Krypton has determined that General Zod framed you for the attack on the Neo-Kryptonian Embassy earlier today as a pretext for his attack on you. Any comments?" "He hurt a lot of people today, not just me," Kara replied. "I'm glad I was able to help bring him to justice." "Is it true that you're the long-lost niece of Jor-El, as reported in the New Avalon Cornet Scientifer last week?" "Yes, that's true," Kara said. "Edison, can we do this later?" Griffin asked. "Kara needs medical attention, and so, to be quite frank, do I." "Just one more question," Edison said. Turning back to Kara, he asked with his trademark grin, "Does that mean we get to call you Supergirl?" Kara grinned. "If you like," she said. Tuesday, April 27th, 2410. Boyce Memorial Medical Center. New Avalon, Zeta Cygni. Jeff Depew was getting a little annoyed. By the time Diana got him to the emergency room the day before, he'd felt fine. Whatever had brought on his little fainting spell, it was clearly not as important as the injuries suffered by various members of the public. But had the medical staff let him leave as a result? No, they'd just kept him lying around all night, under observation, while they dealt with the other patients, then run a battery of tests in the morning. Now he sat and stewed in a private room while he waited for his doctor to come tell him nothing was wrong with him. It was an irritating waste of time. He wanted to get out of the hospital, get a damn haircut and something to eat, and report back to headquarters to see if there was any follow-up investigation to be done. The door opened and B.J. Honeycutt walked in, smiling broadly. "Well, Jeff, I'm pleased to report that there's nothing wrong with you except the presence of a steadily growing alien symbiont that's systematically replacing your body tissue." Jeff grunted. That news didn't alarm him, as Honeycutt knew it wouldn't. That was what the Deodan was supposed to do. "So why did I faint?" he asked. "Near as we can figure, something in the environment you were exposed to dramatically shortened the time to the onset of Deodan resurgence," Honeycutt said. "We're doing some computer models now to try and figure out what, but that's what made you pass out anyway. Your regeneration cycle kicked in almost immediately after vigorous activity ceased, instead of after the usual 5 or 10 minutes. "Could the pseudo-kryptonite have done that?" Jeff asked. "Not supposed to," Honeycutt said, shrugging. "But with the Deodan, there's still a lot of stuff we don't know. The biodynamics lab is working on it. In the meantime, you might as well get out of here." Jeff nodded. "Thanks, BJ. See you around." He left the room, turned to head for the elevator, and was surprised to find Diana Prince waiting in the hallway. She had on street clothes again, not the odd uniform she'd been wearing the day before, and she looked pleased to see him. "I thought you hated hospitals," he said. "I do," she replied, "but I wasn't very gracious the last time you got hurt helping me out, and I wanted to do better this time." Jeff grinned. "Actually, I didn't get hurt," he said. "I just fainted. Pretty silly." Diana shook her head. "There's nothing silly about it. You were working very hard. What you did was quite an achievement." It's not quite that simple. Long story. Diana smiled. Perhaps you wouldn't mind telling me over lunch? Jeff had to stop and think about that, for about half a second. Sure, he said. Griffin stood in the doorway of his office, watching the glaziers replacing his windows. He sighed. His little tussle with Zod had really made a mess. He wasn't sure where he was going to get a new video tube for his space paranoids machine. He might have to make one. Still, it could have been worse. At least Zod hadn't set the place on fire out of spite on his way out. The telephone in his outer office rang. He'd given Lou the day off, so he sloped out and answered it himself. "Ben, are you all right?" came the voice of Skuld Ravenhair. "Yeah, I'm fine," he replied. "I got a little scorched, but it healed up overnight. The XAF-1 wasn't quite so lucky, but the shop guys say it's not too bad, and it's given them some new ideas for shielding and systems integration." "From what I heard, you gave it a pretty good workout." "It worked great," Griffin said. "The sooner we can get them into the field, the better." "That's not the only project we need to accelerate," Skuld said. "I'm not sure what you mean," he replied. "You know perfectly well what I mean," Skuld said in a no-nonsense tone. "If I didn't have Cardinal here, you could have..." "Hold on," Griffin broke in. "I've got another call." He punched a key on the phone. "Griffin here." "What?" "Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Great. Okay, thanks. Keep me posted. Bye." He sat on the corner of Lou's desk for a minute, then sighed and punched Skuld's line open again. "Skuld, we're going to have to go over that ground some other time. That was Yuri. The transport taking General Zod back to New Krypton for trial never arrived. I'm sending a Defiant to search their route, but I want you to go with it." "What about Brightest Day?" Skuld persisted. Griffin thought for a second or two, then said, "All right. Carte blanche, get it done. But no promises about Cardinal." "Okay. I'll be waiting for pickup. Which ship are you sending?" "I'm not sure yet. I'll send you an email." "All right." Skuld hesitated, then said, "Ben?"
"Yeah?"
"You did good." Griffin chuckled. "Thanks. It was... well, this sounds weird, but it was fun. I haven't fought as a jump trooper since... well, hell, I don't even remember. Nice to know I've still got it." "Take care. I'll be waiting for your email." "You too. Be careful out there."
"I will."
Skuld rang off. Griffin hung up the phone, then got up and headed down to the Space Force office to round up a ride for her. That afternoon, Kara turned up in street clothes at the hospital to visit the Titans. Once Sphericon had turned the sun yellow again, she had recovered from her own injuries with almost unseemly haste, and she felt a little guilty about it as she saw her battered, bandaged friends propped up in their beds. Amazingly, though, their injuries weren't all that serious. Apart from Cyborg, Zod had been more interested in getting them out of his way than doing them great harm. Most were being kept for the inevitable observation, and would be going home later in the day. Looking a little downcast, she hung her head and said, "I'm sorry, you guys." Robin, he looked a little silly in a hospital gown and his mask, but the staff at Boyce were good about that kind of thing, even if they knew who he was, gave her a puzzled look. "Sorry? What for?" Kara raised an eyebrow. For almost getting you all killed?" "Oh, that?" Robin made a dismissive gesture. "Eh, that'll happen." "Part of the biz," Stargirl concurred offhandedly. "Yeah," Batgirl, who had, at least, dispensed with her cowl, that would have been just too surreal, agreed.
"Totally."
"My injuries hardly even hurt," Starfire assured Kara earnestly. "Like you, I recover very quickly." Cyborg, who had perhaps the most reason to complain, he had, at the moment, no limbs, grinned broadly and said, "I'm getting new parts!" "I got to be on TV," Wally West, no mask for him, chimed in.
"I didn't like that bat chat anyway," Batgirl added.
Kara was laughing when the door opened and a lanky young man she hadn't seen before entered. He was dressed in a green coverall and carrying a toolbox, had a bright red Van Dyke beard, and he'd shaved his head cue ball bald. "I go out of town for a couple of days," he said in a mellow voice, shaking his head with a smile, "and you guys get the hell kicked out of you. The tower's a mess. Looks like somebody threw a car through it." Actually, somebody threw me through it," Kara admitted. He turned and eyed her, then grinned. "You must be Kara, then. Sorry I didn't get to meet you earlier. I was at the Electronics Expo in Missouri." He switched his toolbox to his left hand and stuck out his right. "Lex Luthor." Kara shook the hand. "Kara Zor-El. I do tech maintenance, repair, and R&D for the Titans," Luthor explained. "And judging by the amount of broken gear that's scattered all over the island," he added with a pointed look at Batgirl, "I've got a busy week ahead of me." "Quit your bitching, Lex," Cyborg said cheerfully. "You've been wanting to redo my photon cannon for months." Luthor set his toolbox on a small table next to Cyborg's rack, opened it, and grinned again. "Well, it looks like I'll get to do a lot more for you than that, Cy, unless you want us to start calling you Bob." Everyone laughed. Two doors down the hall, Len Snart lay back, reading a book on thermodynamics. He felt fine, except for the slightly itchy temporary cast on his leg. Fortunately, he was in line for a bone bond later in the day. "I'm glad Lisa brought over my Trode rig," he remarked to his roommate. "At least I can telepresence class this afternoon." From under a powerful infrared lamp on the other side of the room, Heatwave, Maka Rory, when he wasn't wearing his white suit, snorted. "You are such a nerd, Len," he said. Wednesday, April 28th, 2410. Griffin got home at a little after 5:30 and found the house empty. The first couple of messages on his answer phone were from distant friends who had belatedly caught word of his tangle with Zod and wanted to offer their congratulations. The third... "Hey, I just wanted to let you know, I'm over at Titan's Tower helping the guys put things back together now that they're all out of the hospital, and then I think we're going to get a pizza, so you're on your own for dinner. Oh, this is Kara. You know, we really need to get a house droid. I hate talking to a machine. You know. Anyway, see you later tonight. Bye." Griffin chuckled. Didn't take her long to settle in, did it? He went into the kitchen, looking into the fridge, didn't like the prospects much, and was just thinking about what to do next when the doorbell rang. He went, opened the door, then smiled in surprise. "Oh, hey," he said. "I figured you'd be up at the tower with the others." When Kara got home at 11, she found Griffin in the den, kicked back in a recliner, reading. "Hey," she said, leaning down to give him a kiss on the cheek. "Hey," he replied, putting down his book. "How's the tower?" "Mostly back together," Kara said. She sat down on the couch. "As is Cyborg," she added with a giggle. Griffin laughed. "Good. You'll be pleased to know that the cleanup work downtown is coming along nicely as well, and that your picture was on the front page of about 3/4 of the newspapers in the standard-speaking galaxy this morning." She went a little red at that last part. "Flavor of the week, huh?" she said. "Maybe, maybe not," Griffin replied with a shrug. "Depends on whether you back it up. I figure you've got what it takes." "So you're okay with me, you know, in the costume? Robin said I could join the Titans if I wanted." "If that's what you want to do, go for it," he said. "Where are you going?" "Downtown," she said, pulling her sweatshirt over her head to reveal the top of her costume. "Robin got a tip that the Sky Raiders were going to hit the Geotech building at 11:30. Since you said it's okay," she added with a grin, "we've got a little surprise for them." Griffin laughed. "You'd think after all this time I'd learn to recognize a setup when one comes along," he said, getting to his feet. Kara took off her jeans and fluffed out her skirt, then gave him her brightest smile and said, "I guess it just runs in the family." "I guess so." He gave her a hug. "Go get him, Supergirl." She gave a briskly mock-serious salute. Yes, sir, she said, then grinned, opened the sliding door to the side deck, and took to the air. He was half tempted to go strap on his X-3, grab a couple of blasters, and join her. But no. Wouldn't do to crowd the kids like that. They'd be happy to have him along, he knew, but it might cramp their style. Instead, he chuckled to himself, shut the door, and picked up his book again. This concludes Last Transport. Hope you've enjoyed it.